Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will bring a variety of different subjects. We will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Anything that is out there that is going to be able to make your family life better. And one of the things that we have found is making your family life better is also making sure that your work life is better as well. So anyway, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, our guest today is going to talk about what I mentioned in regards to having our work life work better so that our home life works better. And so our guest today is New York Times bestseller Martin Yate. And he is the author of Knock 'Em Dead 2016, The Ultimate Job Search Guide, now going into its 31st edition. And it is the keystone of a 17-book series, with each book addressing a different aspect of job search and modern career management. Collectively, Martin's books have been published in 63 foreign language editions. Now, Martin's years in career management include successes in an international technology headhunting company, as director of human resources for the technology division of a public company in Silicon Valley, and as director of training and development for a multinational employment services company. Martin has devoted his life to learning what it takes to achieve a successful and fulfilling life. Now, in doing my due diligence, I have found Martin to be warm, witty, and someone who generally cares about helping people gain control of their career and change the trajectory of their life. He is considered by many to be the world's thought leader on career management and job search issues, but his passion is helping someone just like you and I every day. Martin, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hey, Alan, lovely to be with you today.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. I've had a chance to go over the book, and being one of those that's fortunate that I do have a job. In fact, I'm one of those that when you talk about people having multiple jobs or having multiple careers, I'm one of those that seems to spin a lot of pie plates, so I have multiple hats that I wear. So
you are adapted.
Yes.
What Alan's talking about, folks, is I talk about every aspect of career management. And, you know, they say anyone can write a book, all you need is the lack of a social life. Well, he just told you I've done 17 of them, so what does that say about me? In these books, I have developed a new approach to career management as opposed to start at the bottom, be loyal, and hang on with 10 fingers and 10 toes till they export your job to India. And in that philosophy is this idea that you pursue more than one career at a time. And that's what Alan was talking about spinning multiple plates. It is a world where technology allows us to do that, and it gives us more security to have a plan B, not for down the line, but to have a plan B that we invest ourselves in now to a degree. Back to you, Alan.
Well, and one of the things that you mentioned in the book, and I'd like you to kind of stay on that point, is, you know, when you are looking at these other things or you're pursuing these other things, how do you make sure that your current employer understands that this isn't being unfaithful? I know that when you mentioned this some years ago, you know, you got a little bit of blowback on it from the standpoint that somehow it was saying, yeah, I mean, it was like it was saying that you were somehow not being as professional or not being loyal. And you know, and I agree with you, but please share kind of how that came about with you.
I first wrote about this revolutionary idea in 1995, and it was in the days where you used to get on planes and go on book tours, and I went on 23 cities in 23 days. And in every city for 23 days, I had some radio host or some TV host tell me, if I couldn't be loyal to my employer, I must be a socialist or probably a bloody communist, and I should go back to where I came from. And now everyone gets it. Everyone says, wait a minute, he was right. We cannot just be loyal to employers who are not loyal to us. We must have a new approach. And that's where it all started, Alan.
Yeah, and to me it makes perfect sense. And I think it also touches on that area of passion, of doing what it is that you are passionate about that is going to make you happy. And once you're happy, you're going to be a better employee anyway.
Can I give you a little story about that?
Please do.
Ran into as well as doing the books, we have a coaching and a resume writing business. We coach people through the rough patches, and we do resumes for all kinds of folks. So we had this resume client a few years ago, and she's an accounts payable clerk up in New Jersey somewhere. And in talking to her, I discover she's also an antique dealer. Now, it's one of my passions. I love art, antiques. So in talking to her, I discover how this happens. Well, she's always been in accounts receivable. Her grandfather had passed on. He'd been the local jeweler and watchmaker in her town, and she had very fond memories of sitting on his knee on Saturdays when she was a little girl in the shop. And when he passed on, he left all his tools behind, and she had them because no one else wanted them and couldn't bear to be further away. She comes home from work, you know, a number of days, and sees that the clock he'd given her when she was 21 wasn't working. And she watched it, like, not working for 30 days. And then one night she came back, she turned on the TV, and she thought, you know what, I bet I could fix it. And she got her grandpa's tools out the closet and sat down, and she said, 1 o'clock in the morning, I hadn't finished the clock. The coffee table was covered in bits of clock, and I hadn't watched TV and had a wonderful time. Well, she got it fixed in the next couple of nights, and she said, the following weekend, I found myself on Saturday afternoon going round the local flea market looking for broken clocks. 3 months later, she's got so many clocks done, she said she had almost a dozen clocks fixed, I got a $15 table at the local flea market and put the clocks up for sale. I meet her, and it's 4 years later, and she is still an accounts receivable clerk, but she is driving one of the nicer Acuras. And she has, as she said, I make twice the money of anyone I know, and I've got a completely different social life, and it's all because I did something I wanted to do instead of giving every moment of my waking life to my employer. I invested in myself, and it paid back.
I love the story, and I love the concept that, I mean, she's been able to go after two things that we all want. In other words, we want to do something that we passionately want to do because we will enjoy it, but we also want security. So I think she figured out a way to have both of them, and that's what works for her.
Would it be appropriate to talk about how this usually plays out in life?
Absolutely.
Because I think what happens most of us when we're in our late teens and 20s, you know, we're 10 foot tall and bulletproof, and we want to have a go on our own. We believe the Jeep commercials and the Budweiser commercials, and, you know, we think that's what life is. So we have a go at a business. And I speak from experience. My first business went bankrupt when I was 16 years old. So we all have a go, and it doesn't work out. Why? Because we don't know how business works. We have no way of knowing how business works. And someone says to us, Alan, you had a go, son. Now take those silly dreams and fold them neatly and put them under the bed and let's settle down and get a real job. And we all do that. We all say, okay, we had a go, I'm cleaning up, man, and we never do it again. Now, if we look at how the world works, everyone's heard of Dow Chemical. It's the biggest chemical company in the world. The founder, Henry Dow, went bankrupt 5 times. Trying to get that business off the ground. I told you I went bankrupt for the first time at 16. I was 35 before I had a business that looked like it was going to survive, and it was another 5 years until I knew it was going to survive. So we're talking about pursuing things over time. Mm-hmm. I worked at being a writer and not getting published for 20 years. But I've never been into a high-rise building, and I live my own life, and I made a living as a writer for 30 years. So every day you wake up on the right side of the grass, you can be a mindless, numb wage slave, or you can learn to do the best you can for your employer while you also invest yourself in things that are important to you. Either purely entrepreneurial, might make a buck, lessen the stranglehold of the corporation, or two, just do things for the joy they put in your life, because that's important too. Would I be talking too much if I finished the loop on how this works?
Not at all.
All right, so I am the world's very worst rock and roll bass player. I have held that reputation for many, many years. I now have a standing invitation to sit in with the riverboat band in the town where I live anytime I want. But I've been working at doing something badly just for the joy of it since I was a teenager. I'd always wanted to dance, got divorced, and decided to start taking dance lessons. I last danced with a professional ballet company when I was 55. I was on stage for 15 minutes in the Nutcracker with the North Carolina Ballet Company out of Asheville.
That's great.
I've been collecting antiques. I like prohibition. You talk about health in the family. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I gave up trying to drink the world dry of alcohol and took to collecting prohibition-era cocktail shakers that everyone bought when it was illegal to drink cocktails. And my wife, who's had a side gig, who's had a plan B on eBay for 10 years, says, "You are going to open a store on eBay this year, or I'm going to divorce you because I can't stand all this junk around anymore." So we have three things there that I've invested myself in because they brought me joy. And there is always in the back of your mind, it might take a while, but one of these will make you money. After all, my core career is now being a writer. 30 years ago, it was a dream. Sometimes these dreams take time to realize. And we're all raised in this world where, we see they reckon we see 2,000 commercials a day. And they're all saying, "You deserve this product. It's going to make you younger, thinner, taller, sexier, and golly gosh, people are just going to love you for it. And all you have to do is buy it and buy it now because you deserve it." We're raised on this instant gratification rubbish of spending our money on instant gratification instead of investing in our future happiness and fulfillment. And that's where I think we should be investing our time.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And when you were talking a little bit about corporations, one of the things that it made me think of is that how do you think it is helping in regards to some of the corporations that are changing the way in which they function? And I'll use Google as an example, to where they are trying to bring people in and they're trying to have them set up a work environment that does make them happy so that they will stay and so that they will be more productive. Talk a little bit about this.
I'm not sure of that one, Alan.
Okay.
I've been around long enough that I've the boomers were cursed because they were babies who didn't have a serious work environment, and Generation X and Generation Y and Millennials all cursed for the same thing, which is basically youngsters today don't know how to work. But we are getting, especially in technology, corporations that are founded and launched and sometimes become immensely successful by very young people. And they are trying new ideas. Will it work? Will it change the face of professional life? I very much doubt it. Okay. Is it good news copy? Oh, absolutely. And don't for a moment think that some of these things aren't tried just for the PR value they have. There's a situation, comedy or drama on TV all the time, where the office is full of beanbags and people playing table tennis. There's not really a lot of companies out there, and if you're running you're working in an insurance agency in town, there probably isn't room for that many beanbags and table tennis tables. So we have to take everything we hear in the media with a grain of salt. Right? It's okay. You can't accept everything on face value. It'd be great if workplaces were more relaxed, but at the same time, you can have a relaxed work atmosphere. But the people who really make the money and really make the decisions and really make the world go round, even in those companies who have heads who are multi-billionaires in their early 20s, are men and women who know how to wear a suit and use a knife and fork. And so there are certain skills relevant to professional success which are never going to change. If you dress like a slob and use a knife and fork like you're slaughtering a goat, right, you're never going to make it in the professional world. Doesn't matter how talented you are, there are people who will not have you in their realm.
Makes sense. And we have a question that's coming across right now, an email question, and this one touches right on the subject that you were just talking about in regards to the big corporations. This one says, last year, over 1,000 of my fellow employees and myself were laid off at IBM. Being over 50, I have not been able to find a position at my level of expertise. Can you talk about the job market as it applies to my age group and where you see the situation going in the future?
Wow, big question. Very valid question. Okay, first of all, 2020 hindsight is really a pain in the neck. But if this hasn't happened to you yet, you start keeping your ear to the ground. You go to Vault.com and Glassdoor.com and you read the newspapers and you listen to the rumor. And if there's a rumor that there's a merger coming up or a layoff coming up, you do not want to be caught job hunting with 50 or 500 or 1,000 of your closest friends. You need to be proactive. That's number one. Now, current situation. What we all know that age and wage discrimination is illegal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet it exists in every company, in every profession.
Sure does.
Age and wage discrimination is a fact of life. There hasn't been a statistically reliable study done on this yet, to the best of my knowledge. But it is the general feeling of amongst those people in career management who I personally regard as the peers, that in a 50-year work life, which is what we're all in the midst of, by the time someone reaches 60, somewhere between 2 and 3 out of 10 of us are still in the white-collar workforce. 6 or 7 out of 10 are being pushed out during that 10-year period because of age and wage discrimination. This affects, I'm going to talk about two things now. It affects the way we plan our careers moving forward, and then I'll talk about what we can do if we have been sideswiped like this, if we played by the rules and got sideswiped.
Perfect.
As you're climbing up the ladder, we deal with people in all walks of life all around the world, but we do a lot of business with people with technology companies, successful people in technology companies. And increasingly, when we start writing a resume for someone, we talk about why they are now, where they want to go in the next job, and then I always believe that any short-term action should be tied into long-term actions. Mm-hmm. And we talk about down the road. And if they say, well, I want to be a vice president, I say, okay, fine, great, let's hope that happens. Well, what if it doesn't? What's your plan B?
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have a plan B, you've got to start having one. But I'm increasingly having very smart men and women say to me, yeah, that's a good point. I really don't want to go up any higher because that just puts a bigger target on my back. I kind of really want to stay at this level, keep my skills sharp, skills that I could sell to someone else so that, if I did get pushed out, I'd have something I could sell.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have a business I could launch. Makes a lot more sense, doesn't it? So there is this change in thinking going on, that chasing it to the corner office only makes sense if you've got guaranteed long-term employment. Now, if you have played by the rules and you have been sideswiped, let's look at that situation. Certain things have probably happened. If you got a layoff, most people take a break and they don't get into it. Two, a lot of boomers have changed jobs before, even if not recently, and they don't think there's anything to it. Well, everything has changed. 90% of the resumes I get for rewriting for people in their late 40s and above, their resume's hopeless. It's never going to be found. You know, we have resume databases now, which have over 400 million resumes in them. No one, and you know, as an example, LinkedIn, social networking site, it's essentially a resume database, by another word. And you have people in there that say, they put in their name and then they put in their job title, looking for opportunity.
Yep.
Do you think any recruiter in the world goes to the LinkedIn database and puts in as for the job title they're looking to fill, and the only reason they're going to go that there is because they have a job description with a job title? Do you think there's any job in the world that's called looking for an opportunity? So, you know, I'm an experienced businessman. I know how to do these things. You don't. I can't tell you the amount of executives that come to me and I put them through job search and they say, I know how to do that. I said, what do you know how to do? Well, I've been in management. I've been hiring people for 25 years. I said, do you think hiring people has anything to do with getting a job interview and turning it into a job offer? Long pause. Oh, hadn't thought of it like that.
Never been on the other side.
So, number one, we've got to re-educate ourselves. If your job search is having a problem, stop. Stop now. Don't do anything more today. Go out, take a long walk. Think about this. Maybe I need to put myself back to school for a week and get up to speed on this. Now, what I write about, what I'm dedicating my life to, I know a fair amount about it. And this I do know. It ain't brain surgery. If you're smart, you can get yourself up to speed in a couple of weeks on how to really execute a job search that's going to work. You might need to rewrite your resume or have it redone, but let's do that now. Let's stop thinking there's problems with me because it's their fault. Now, often it is their fault, but not all the time. And we can say, you know, these youngsters that I'm interviewing for, they could be my kids and I'm not getting hired and they're such idiots not to hire me. Well, it might be true, but here's the other side of the coin. The older we get, the more likely it is we're going to be interviewed by people younger than ourselves. The more likely it is that we are going to overcompensate because we are worried about getting back to work. And we spend our time at job interviews showing we can leap tall buildings with a single bound and stop speeding bullets with the palm of my hand. You know how this comes across, Alan?
Cocky.
He's an old dog. Can't treat him new tricks. He's going to be a real pain in the neck for me to manage.
Yep.
Next. So we have to be careful. When we write our resume, you know, if you're a resume that's desperately trying to show your all things to all people, of course you're not getting interviews. No one's ever seeing it. It's not discoverable. But when you get interviews, we've got to focus both on that resume and when we go to interviews on showing we can do the job. And if you're worried about age discrimination, you either come out and worry about it or you try and do something when you're in there. And Alan, it's up to you whether you want me to address that topic.
Well, you know what I'd like? I've heard you talk about, you know, approaching the job interviews with a philosophy rather than a series of canned answers. So if you could touch on that for a little bit, because I've sat down with friends that have asked me to rehearse with them. They say, okay, you know, look, I'm going on this interview and I've been out of the workforce, you know, can I practice with you? And so what they were doing is kind of setting up their canned answers. And, you know, and then again, and I heard in one of your speeches where you're saying, don't go in there with canned answers, go in there with a philosophy that they can relate to. So if you could just share a little bit about that, I think that would be very helpful.
Okay. Here's two or three points. Your weakest professional skill, bar none. And when I talk about a professional skill, the skills that put money in your pocket, food on your table, and keep a roof over your head, your very weakest, everyone that's listening today, it's true of all of us, your, mine, all our weakest professional skills are the same. It's our ability to turn job interviews into job offers. We've done it less often than anything else in life.
Great point.
So you don't go to a job interview to decide if you want the job or not. This is point number one. You've got nothing to decide, even if it's the last company on earth. Even if somehow you ended up with an interview for a janitor and you're a VP of operations, it don't matter. You are there for one reason only, and that's to turn that job interview into a job offer. It doesn't matter whether you want it or not. You just got to take the opportunity and turn it into a moment when you can turn a weakness into a strength. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, every job in the world exists for the same couple of reasons. First of all, it's to help the company make money by bringing money in the door, by keeping money in the door, right? By saving mm-hmm. money, by yeah. increasing productivity, which is saving money and making more time to make more money. Right? The second reason all jobs exist is because they haven't been able to automate it out of existence with a piece of software or export it to Mumbai, India. The reasons they haven't been able to do that is because your job at its heart is about fairly complex problem solving. So you get hired because of your ability to know the professional geography of your area of expertise well enough that you can anticipate the problems that come over the horizon every day and get in the way of helping you help the company make money or save money, increase productivity.
Mm-hmm.
You can anticipate them, identify them, and prevent them. And when you can't prevent them entirely, you've still got advance notice that they're coming to your desk day after tomorrow, and you know how to handle them when they do. If you recognize this, you can go to every job interview, and you can look at the job posting before you go and think, okay, this is what they want me to do. What are the problems that happen in this area? Right?
Good point.
What do I do to anticipate and prevent the problems from arising in the first place? What do I do to solve them when they do? What are some examples of both of these?
That's great.
Right, so you go to a job interview, and let's say it's a company wants to build a sales force in a new market. You know, you're in Baltimore; they've never been in Baltimore before. Well, you need to be able to answer the questions and answer the questions with illustrations of you doing the job. But they say that the job offers don't necessarily go to the people who give the smartest, slickest, canned answers. Job interviews are traditionally a one-sided examination of skills. If you can turn it into a two-way conversation between professionals with a common interest, you've gone a long way towards getting that job offer. And the way you do that is to ask questions about the guts of the job. With our examples, sales job, new market, Baltimore, one of the questions I would ask is, so the company's new in Baltimore. I'm sure you've broken into a lot of markets before. What are the typical problems you've had with salespeople when they've had this kind of job? Who succeeds? Who fails? What are the biggest challenges? Go for the guts of the job. There's a big difference between asking those questions and asking if they have a dental plan.
Yes, definitely. You know what? We need to take a break, but we're going to come right back. And for any of you, if you are out there, if you're sitting at your computer, if you want to follow along with us, you can go to Martin's website, which is knockemdead.com, and that's knockemdead.com. You can open up another window. You can follow along with us, but we're going to take a break. Stay with us. We will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Martin Yates, and we're talking about knocking him dead. We're talking about his ultimate job search guide. And the reason why I think this is such a great fit for this show is that if we are not happy in that job that we are in, we're going to bring that home. And obviously, if we don't have a job, we're going to have more problems at home as well. So again, I think this is a great subject. It's a great topic for our show. And again, Martin, I want to thank you for coming on. And we got another message. Now, we've talked a little bit about that kind of baby boomer person, that over 50 person that's being laid off and having trouble getting back into the workforce. We have another email question that has come in, and this one reads, our son graduated college 2.5 years ago and has not been able to find a job in his field of study. He has taken on a few minimum wage jobs to try to build some sort of work history. It's very discouraging after spending 5 years and about $130,000 for his education. He says many of the potential employers say that because of the recession, many older Americans are staying in their jobs longer because much of their retirement was lost in the stock market or the reduction of the value of their home. Do you believe this is true? And if so, what can our son and young people across the country do about it?
It's very hard. This is a very tough situation. We have 7 kids. We have 5 adopted special needs kids, and I have 2 kids from an earlier marriage. And one of my children was born with a brain the size of a planet. He graduated from Berkeley with 2 simultaneous degrees, and he also learned to speak Russian along the way and went off on a Bard scholarship to St. Petersburg for 6 months. And I swear on a stack of Bibles that he didn't do a lick of work for the next 3 years. And we were convinced that he would never work. Very, very bright, intensely shy, perhaps had Asperger's, was certainly OCD, and we really despaired. And then he found his feet, and he found his feet through volunteering, and he's now a very successful political operative. And he spends his days going to Senate buildings around the country and buttonholing senators and the leaders of the Senate and convincing them of the of the particular project he is working on at the moment. Now, why did that work? Well, they say about Asperger's, they're not very good at dealing with people. They don't really care about your point of view.
Mm-hmm.
My first publisher was Asperger's. It's why he was successful. He didn't care what anyone else thought. And I'm convinced it's the reason this one of my sons is successful in this field. He doesn't care about someone trying to blow him off. He's got something to say, and he's going to find someone to listen to it. So, first of all, don't give up on your son. There is hope. If there was hope for this one of ours, there's hope for this one of yours, too. Now, things that can get in the way. They don't try when they come out of work. Especially boys, it's been proven, our minds don't get fully wired until we're 25, 26. If he's been out of college for a while and he's been working, I don't know what the jobs are. There's a lot of kids want to do that. If he wants to get serious about his career, as you want him to do. I have people come to me and they want to buy a package of coaching and resumes for their son. And I said, well, there's no point in doing it unless he wants it. Does he want it? Well, no, we just thought it would be really helpful. I said, it's just, you can take a course of water, but you won't make him drink.
Uh-huh.
You only, when a kid's been out of school a couple of years, we all know as parents, once they hit 17, there's nothing you can do they're going to listen to. Nothing. I have people all over the world queuing up to give me money for coaching. Can't get any of the kids to listen to me. Not one of them. But, as parents, we all know that. It's just mm-hmm. the way it is. So if he wants to badly enough, and you can help him get off your payroll and get the room back, it's worth, perhaps getting him some professional guidance with career counseling and resume and job search help so that he can get back to work. The thing is, once a young man or a young woman hits 30 and they haven't got their foot in the door, it gets more and more difficult. because there's so many generations that have come after them. They prove that they haven't got a foothold in the professional world, and it gets increasingly difficult to do so. So the time between their 25 and 29 are critical years. If he wakes up and wants to do something, give him the help you can. Right? And that might be buying him a book, or it might be getting him more services. But there is no point in doing it until he has faced the situation and said, you know, I'm really depressed because nothing's working out for me, and, you know, I've got to get serious about this. Someone, careers take management in this modern world. And until the individual realizes that the way I'm doing it isn't working, they're not going to listen to other approaches. They have to want to find a better way than the path they've been following.
Makes perfect sense. And I think we have another question coming in, and this one I think is somewhat similar, but I want to share it. This one says, I purchased your book and I'm anxious for it to arrive. I have obviously been using the wrong approach, as after 30 resume submissions and 10 interviews, I am still stuck working at a large retail warehouse and unable to secure a position in my field as a chemical engineer. I am told that although I have over 4 years of experience, the other people applying for these positions are more qualified. I am just not sure what I can do. If I can't find work in my field, how do I become more qualified? Are there ways of changing my resume to get past this issue?
Wow. There's about 10 questions in there.
Yeah, I know.
We got a month's worth of programming here, Alex. Yeah. I think the issue here is 30 resumes, 10 interviews. Your resume's working. I don't know which of your books, which of my books you've read. I've written 17 of them. I don't know where you bought the book, and if you bought it online and you're having it shipped, you should have bought the Kindle version and have it instantly, right? And not have to pay for the shipping. Only makes sense, and you can run those things on any machine. You don't have to have a Kindle reader. So I'm going to assume that he didn't buy the resume book because he's got a resume. If he's had sent out 30 resumes and got 10 interviews, sounds like, well, he might have used the resume book. Those are pretty good numbers. It sounds like the problem is his ability to turn a job interview into a job offer. The short answer is, I have a book called Knock 'Em Dead Job Interview. And it's 300-odd pages that focuses on exactly the headset and the tactics you have to use to turn job interviews into job offers. Because it sounds to me like you're well over half the way there. It's you're just not closing the deal. And there's a whole lot of ways you can handle yourself in a job interview. And none of them are about becoming a snake oil salesman. It's all about understanding what the customer wants and understanding what you are able to give and want to give and sharing that information in a way that the customer will find accessible. If you can learn to do that, you can turn job interviews into job offers. And that's why if you've looked in, you know, like the 2016 job search guide you've got there, Alex, it's full of endorsements at the front. I got 2 job offers. I got 4 job offers. I got 3 job offers last time. I got 5 this time. This is incredible. Didn't make those up, because I actually show you in the book how to turn one job offer you don't want into a number of job offers you do want. And this is all built on a system that is proven throughout the world for 30 years. Not only that, I have a book called Hiring the Best, which is about employee selection, which has also been in print for 29 years and in multiple editions. So I know how these things work. Hiring decisions are made on very logical criteria. If you understand what they are and how you can respond to them honestly and intelligently, you can get job offers. You don't have to be slick to get a job offer. You have to show that you can do the job, you're suitable for the company and the profession, and that you're someone that's going to be pleasant to work around. You can work on those things. You can sell those things at an interview. You will get a job offer, and you will start a career as a successful chemical engineer.
Now, you've also spoken, I've heard you speak about developing transferable skills. I think one of the 10 questions that were in there sort of, I think, comes from the
he's saying that he has 4 years experience, but that he's being told that other people are more qualified. Would you also suggest that there might be, if he can find out where they're saying he is lacking, a way in which he could maybe get some additional updated training in those areas? Would that be another thing you would suggest?
Yeah, there's two issues you bring up, Alex. One is the transferable skills we talk about in Knock 'Em Dead 2016. People write about transferable skills all the time, and you've probably seen a blog that says, when they put things like communication skills, multitasking, problem solving, creativity on a job posting, it doesn't mean anything. You can put any job title on top of that. It's stupid. They don't know what they're talking about. Well, I happen to have worked in legal, and I happen to have worked in human resources and training and development for public companies, and tell you that there really is something behind this. There are a certain handful of skills. They're not hard skills like your ability to program in Java. They are what we call soft skills, multitasking, time management, organization, analytical skills or problem-solving skills, communication skills, and there are eight of them. There's a handful of these that we call transferable skills. Why? Because they underlie your success, your ability to be successful in whatever profession you work in. So if you've been 4 years working in other areas, can't get into your areas, you do have some skills that will be relevant. You just got to learn what they are and how to share them. And I'm a bear of little brain. What was the second part of the question?
From the standpoint of training, you know, in other words, the type of training, and I think you have sort of, you've touched on it, is that there are more general areas of training that he can add to his resume, you know, because he's saying, you know, well, you know, I've got over 4 years experience, and they're saying that the other people are more qualified. So,
yeah,
would
well,
it,
you
would,
know
would
that
makes sense.
You're okay, but we've got other people more qualified. It's a blow off.
Okay.
90% of the time, it's a blow off. They've got more experience. It could be more experience, but you know, you come out of school and there's no jobs for entry-level people. Everyone has to have 5 years experience. 5 years later, you go looking for a job. Guess what? No jobs for people with 5 years experience. They all want entry-level or 10 years experience. It's Murphy's Law. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's easy for that to be the blow-off line. Yeah, you were great, Alex. I wouldn't work with you on a bet. You were wonderful, Alex. You were terrible, Alex. I'm muttering to myself. But we just found some people that were more experienced than you are that we could bear to be with 50 weeks of the year. You we couldn't bear to be with. So it might be that they found more people with experience, but I think it's they found people that were they felt would do a better job, and this comes right back again, not to your skills, but your ability to communicate your skills in a way that is accessible and tells employers that you understand the role of your job in business and can make a contribution to part of the team and not be a pain in the neck for your manager. That's really what it's all about.
Okay, well, now let's jump right to the fact that they've gone to the interviews and they've got the job. So now they're excited. They're ready to go. They're going in, but they're now going to be around a lot of new people. Once they've got this job, how can they get a fast start and get noticed for all the right reasons?
Okay. First thing, you remember that advice you read so often about you should tell employers when you're trying to get a job interview what their problems are and how you're going to solve them?
Mm-hmm.
Don't. Ever. It's not going to get you job interviews. They're going to be offended. How could someone who's never been here a day tell me what my problems are and that he's got the answer to them? How insulting and stupid can you be? Secondly, they're going to feel the same way when you join the company. Don't offer any ideas for 90 days. Here's your job for the first 90 days. Show up always on time, often early. Never leave on time, always leave a bit late. Do whatever you are asked to do, whether it's in your job description or not. Ask people, get to know people's names, use those names. Ask people for advice, thank them for their advice. Seek your manager's direction, follow that direction and let him or her know that you are following that direction. Your job in the first 90 days is to find your way to the restrooms, basically. Just find out how the job works and become basically competent in the job. Once you have done that, the second step is to become as good as you possibly can be in that job while identifying, and this you've very quietly been doing over the first 90 days, in every department, in every company, there's an inner circle and an outer circle. The people in the inner circle are the ones who have job security, who get promotions and raises and plum assignments. By being quiet and just helping everyone and being equally friendly to everyone during the first 90 days, you have the opportunity to watch who the players are. Who are the people who are really valued by the company? Because if you want to make something of your life, of your professional career, and that has a huge impact on the personal life you're able to have outside of work, right? If you can identify what's important within the career, you can begin to ally yourself with the people who are clearly in the inner circle. Without going asking them to be friends, you just have to know who they are, see how they dress, see how they behave in meetings, and try to be as helpful to them as you can as the opportunity arises. Now, if you do these things over the first 90 days in your new job, you'll be off to a good start.
Well, Martin, thank you so much. I mean, I think that this is all very helpful. And again, for everybody out there, the book is called Knock 'Em Dead 2016, The Ultimate Job Search Guide. And again, you can get plenty of information not only about that one, but about some of the other books that is part of the series. And that's to go to knockemdead.com. Now, if you're driving out there, obviously you can't write this down. You can always go to our website, Answers for the Family, and we will have all of Martin's information is right there. Not only will it be there, but you can also go on, you can re-listen to the show, you can pick up some of those little tidbits that you thought you may have missed because you were driving. But this is a lot of great information. And Martin, again, I want to thank you so much for coming on because I think this is so important that we have this part of our life under control, because if we don't, I think it affects every other part of our life.
It's the unhappiness at work squeezes out and manifests itself in our relations with our partners and our kids and our relations.
Yeah. Yep.
And the biggest lesson is you didn't used to have to manage your career. You got a job and stuck with it. It's different today. You have to learn to manage your career. Alex, been great being on the show with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And for everybody out there, please tune in next week when our guest that joins us will be discussing the parenting skill and how to discover your unique parenting powers. And remember, if you miss or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com and go to iTunes and subscribe to our show. That way the show will be sent to you automatically. It will be waiting there for you. So after a long day's work, you want to sit down, you want to hear who was on the show, it's right there for you. And remember, the next time that you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by and just like us or comment on some of the things that we have. We try to bring not only great guests with great topics that are going to help make your family life better, but we also put great articles on our Facebook page so that people can read those and also get the same kind of feeling that you get listening to somebody who is really able to talk about things that is going to make your life better. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.